Welcome to Mind Walk, produced at Upstart Radio for Free Radio Santa Cruz, KRFP Radio Free Moscow, IndieMedia.org, RadioForAll.net, community and micropower stations worldwide.
Freedom is under attack. Under attack by hysterical and well-funded Christian psychotics, intellectually undernourished leaders who lie and manipulate information, overfed, baby Huey, coward bitch motherfuckers like Karl Rove and their suck-up weakling apologists like Sean Hannity. To question authority is to be somehow unpatriotic, un-American, and in league with terrorists worldwide? Fuck you! With even election results becoming more and more questionable, the Constitution a thing to be manipulated, ignored, and frivolously amended, even democracy itself seems to be on the run. So where's the one place you can go and tell your version of the truth, rail against liars, fakes, and propagandists with your own unique propaganda, sign your name to it, and let the whole world know how you feel? That's right, the internet. Perhaps responsible for the most substantial shifts in culture in the last several decades. There's so much freedom and potential on the World Wide Web that one is barely able to get one's head around it. Who in their right mind would dare to regulate or charge websites to be on the internet? Who would dare to rain on a parade so fantastic that many of us would not know what to do without our high-speed connection and our lives on the internet? Actually, some very powerful forces. Telco companies want to make you pay for your site to be carried on the internet. If you can't afford to pay, guess what? That's right, your cyber history, pal. The Bush administration wants major internet and phone companies to keep track of where their customers surf, all in the name of the war on terror, don't you know? How much do you want to bet they want the internet regulated, contained, and thrown into a cell at Guantanamo Bay? For a country that talks so much about freedom being on the march, seems to me that some people want anything but. If they come for your freedom, you must not only resist, you must strike back with a vengeance that will stun them. On this front, if your anger and outrage are not at the forefront, then you're already dead. Dead to me anyway. Fuck these cowards, these traitors, these enemies of democracy. To question authority is to be somehow unpatriotic, un-American, and in league with terrorists worldwide. Fuck you! With even election results becoming more and more questionable, the Constitution a thing to be manipulated, ignored, and frivolously amended, even democracy itself seems to be on the run.
Hi, this is Jello Biafra. It helps to have long memories at a time when we're not supposed to know any history past last year's American Idol winner, but in 1996, a corrupt Congress and a very corrupt Democratic president rammed through the Telecommunications Act, which led to the growth of Fox News, Clear Channel, and more monopolizing of media, interfering with our ability to communicate and get other ideas out into the public discourse. Now it's happening again under the guise of telecommunications reform that corporate media has the gall to say, oh, it's a great law that will give faster internet service. What it's actually designed to do is wipe out internet neutrality. You know, net neutrality, where anybody can put up anything on the net and communicate it to someone else. But if this goes through, the telecommies and big phonies like Verizon, AT&T, and Comcast, as if they don't have enough money already, can decide who gets the new faster service and can pay gazillions of dollars for it, and who gets relegated to the backwater and sent back to horse and buggy days in hopes we won't be able to network with each other as much anymore to fight back against the onslaught of corporate rule. It's a matter of freedom of speech and freedom to communicate.
I want to talk to you about a critical issue of our day. It's an issue that's not just about the internet, but about free and open communication. That's why I'm sending this video message to 200,000 people in Massachusetts and across the country to urge them to get informed and get involved. The issue is net neutrality. If you've ever wondered what's at stake in the fight over net neutrality, the answer is as clear as the picture on your screen. The internet allows me and everyone else to communicate directly with you. No matter what your political agenda, no matter what your political party, net neutrality protects your freedom of speech. The internet has revolutionized the way we communicate. We use it for instant contact with family and friends. We rely on it for business and commerce. And we turn to it to share our views on just about every subject under the sun. It has brought America and the world closer than ever before. Because the internet is such a vital part of our lives and culture, I believe that all Americans should have equal access to it, and that it must remain free from discrimination and anti-competitive behavior. These basic principles could be compromised if some telephone and cable companies are able to limit or control what we can or cannot use. We cannot allow this to happen. That is why I am announcing my support for net neutrality. As I see it, net neutrality is about protecting the innovative, democratic spirit that has always characterized the internet. Our strength and progress as Americans feed on this same spirit of freedom and openness, and it is our duty to protect it. Congress deliberately keeps the internet free of taxes and surcharges in order to maintain its openness and continue to stimulate innovation. I believe that unfettered access to the internet should continue, and I'll do everything I can to make sure that any telecom legislation Congress considers will protect the neutrality and freedom of the internet. We also have to find ways to grow our freedom by making sure that every American can connect to the internet at the highest possible speeds and with the best technology available. Net neutrality and the internet itself can fulfill its promise only if America builds a world-class internet infrastructure. And America needs to build an ever faster internet in order to compete in the world, create good jobs here at home, and meet the needs of our citizens. This is a vital mission, and Congress has an important role to play in ensuring that such an infrastructure is built. This issue may affect every American, and every American has the right and responsibility to get informed and get involved. Every American has the right and responsibility to get informed and get involved.
I must say, having gone through those gyrations, you're looking beautiful today, Dave.
Every American has the right and responsibility to get informed and get involved.
I must say, having gone through those gyrations, you're looking beautiful today, Dave.
Every American has the right and responsibility to get informed and get involved.
I must say, having gone through those gyrations, you're looking beautiful today, Dave.
Every American has the right and responsibility to get informed and get involved.
If a CIA officer, paramilitary, or special operations soldier from the United States were captured in Iran or North Korea, and they were roughed up, and those governments said, well, they were interrogated in accordance with our interpretation of the Geneva Conventions, and then they were put on trial, and they were convicted based on secret evidence that they were not able to see, how would you react to that?
Mm-hmm. You can ask this question all you want, but the bottom line is, and the American people have got to understand this, that this program won't go forward.
If there's vague standards applied, like those in Common Article 3 of the Geneva Convention,
she's not going to go forward.
You can't ask a young professional on the front line of protecting this country
to
violate law.
Now, I know they said they're not going to prosecute.
Think about that.
Go ahead and violate it.
We won't prosecute you.
Because These people aren't going to do that.
We can justify anything you want.
Bring up this example or that example. I'm just telling you the bottom line. And that's why this debate is important.
And it's a vital debate.
Now perhaps some in Congress don't think the program is important.
That's fine. I don't know if they do or don't.
I think it's vital, and I have the obligation to make sure that our professionals
who I would ask to go
conduct interrogations to find out what might be happening, who might be coming
to this country.
I got to give them the tools they need, and that is clear law.
The point I just made is the most important point.
And that is the program is not going forward.
Maybe you can give a hypothetical about North Korea or any other country.
The point is that the program is not going to go forward
if our professionals do not have clarity in the law.
And the best way to provide clarity in the law
is to make sure the Detainee Treatment Act is the crux of the law.
That's how we define Common Article 3, and it sets a good standard for the countries that you just talked about.
Next man.
I know you think it's an important point.
Other countries interpret the Geneva Conventions as they see fit. You're saying that you'd be okay with that.
I am saying that I would hope that it would adopt the same standards we adopt.
And that by clarifying Article 3, we make it stronger.
We make it clearer.
We make it definite.
And I will tell you again, David,
you can ask every hypothetical you want.
But the American people have got to know.
The facts.
And the bottom line is simple.
If Congress passes a law that does not clarify the rules.
They do not do that.
The program's not going forward.
Next man.
David, next man, please. Thank you.
Took you a long time to unravel. It took you a long time to ask your question.
Our community and the communities of the world are now prison camps, all because of the aggression of U.S. imperialism and the bureaucratic capitalism here at home. That the fight is just started, actually, to change the conditions that destroy life, and that is our life's work. We will just intensify the struggle and make the people aware that it's their power that makes the change and the course of history and the conditions under which we live. Because we must always realize that the people who have the power or the potential power. And without that knowledge, we don't have the rudimentary knowledge. With the weapon of the people, we know that we're due for an eventual victory. People have the power, and they always respond in their best interest eventually. Our community and the communities of the world are now prison camps. The fight has just started, actually, to change the conditions that destroy life, and that is our life's work. We will just intensify the struggle and make the people aware that it's their power that makes the change and the course of history and the conditions under which we live. People have the power, and they always respond in their best interest eventually. Our community and the communities of the world are now prison camps. The fight has just started, actually, to change the conditions that destroy life, and that is our life's work. we will just intensify the struggle and make the people aware that it's their power that makes the change. People have the power, and they always respond in their best interest eventually.
Neoliberalism is a political economy that is being imposed throughout the global south. It's a political economy that is being imposed by four agents. The first agent would be the G8 countries, the eight most powerful countries in the world, which includes the United States, countries in the European Union, Canada, etc. The second agent in the imposition of this political economy is transnational corporations, which you all know, like Nike, Levi's, Coca-Cola, etc., etc. The third agent would be international financial institutions such as the World Trade Organization, the International Monetary Fund, the World Bank, the Inter-American Development Bank, etc., etc. The fourth and final agent, which is where people get caught, is a minority of the opulent. That is a very small percentage of the population in these countries in the global south that are gaining from these trade agreements, that are gaining from neoliberalism. And these people can be identified as a business, political, narcotics, mafia. These are the people that are profiting on. In the meantime, indigenous farm workers that don't even read or write or even speak Spanish throughout southern Mexico are being pushed off their land, are being pushed off extremely violently. I said neoliberalism was a political economy that was imposed. North American Free Trade Agreement was signed in 1992 and went into effect on January 1st of 1994. Now, the reason that I say that this was an imposition is because none of us had a vote on it. None of your parents had a vote or say. They didn't have a voice in whether or not this free trade agreement was going to go into effect between Canada, the United States, and Mexico. No Mexican citizens had a vote or voice in this whatsoever. No Canadian citizens had a vote in it, right? None of these free trade agreements that are being imposed are transparent. Nobody has vote or voice in whether or not they go into effect. They go into effect thanks to the imposition of executive branch of federal governments, these transnational corporations, and these international financial institutions, and again, this business, narcotics, political mafia that exists throughout the global south. That exposes the inherent corruption of these trade agreements. If they were so good for us, for American labor, for laborers throughout the world, if they were so good for the environment, if they were so good for the people, then you'd think they'd give us a chance to have a say in whether or not they're going to happen, but they don't. As a matter of fact, whenever these world leaders meet to decide whether or not these things are going to happen, they put up huge fences around their conferences or their summits, and when people try to protest, they get beat down by the cops. And that's the bottom line. Now, there's more to neoliberalism than that. When I say military occupation, we think about Iraq, we think about Palestine. Some of you might even think about Colombia or even South Korea. But military occupation is only the most blatant form of imposing a political economy. But neoliberalism connotates much more than that when it comes to occupation. Neoliberalism includes not only military occupation, but also social occupation, cultural occupation, political occupation, economic occupation, psychological occupation, and in the end, spiritual occupation. All of our commercials, all of our products, our way of life in this country and in European countries is imposed throughout the global south, and people who live by traditional means in tribes that have lived that way for thousands and thousands of years are no longer considered economically viable. What neoliberalism has done in this imposition is it has commodified natural and human resources. What that means is it's turned human resources and natural resources into merchandise to be bought and sold. Human resources are put on a scale with natural resources. What has happened with neoliberalism is that natural resources like gold, silver, uranium, petroleum, water, earth, are now considered to be more valuable than a lot of human beings that inhabit the lands that are rich in these natural resources. I want to be very clear with you about this. What I'm saying is the word genocide. Very clearly, what we're talking about is genocide. Throughout the Global South, historically and to date, the political economy, the political economic model of neoliberalism, which has been imposed on these countries, has institutionalized racism in it, which displaces communities that don't fit into the equation. Natural and human resources are just variables in an equation for profit. And unfortunately, more and more and more, we're seeing that human resources are an eliminatable variable in that equation for profit. People are being annihilated. This isn't new, but it's a model that we're seeing repeated over and over and over and over again. I said that military occupation is the most blatant form of occupation, or the most blatant form of imposing neoliberalism throughout the world. There's less blatant forms, but they're just as disgraceful. One of them, which we're beginning to see here in the United States and have been seeing throughout the Global South for quite some time, is the militarization of the police. Police are starting to look a lot more like soldiers. Our police are not supposed to look like soldiers. We're not supposed to be policed by soldiers. Soldiers are to defend our country from some sort of foreign invasion or whatever. But our police, policing us as citizens, are never supposed to look like soldiers. That's unconstitutional. Now, the militarization of police is one step down, but if we dig in deeper, there's a more insidious, more violent form of imposition, which is called paramilitarism. Paramilitary is basically the militarization of civilians. When governments and military and police train and arm and finance civilians to kill and attack other civilians. 9 times out of 10, when this is happening, it's happening because the government is getting concerned with citizens in their countries organizing or resisting the imposition of neoliberalism.
The indigenous groups in Mesoamerica, in Oaxaca, in Chiapas, in Guerrero, Veracruz, down south to El Salvador, Guatemala, Honduras, Nicaragua, they have a natural resistance to the imposition of neoliberalism. All these people, all these tribes, this is a pueblo, this is their land, this was their land before we knew it as these nations, right? And they have one very important thing in common, which is their methods of organization, their methods of struggle, their methods of survival. These methods of organization are a worldview, and they're founded in the notion that we should organize our societies horizontally. People actually come together in general assemblies and talk in 3, 4, 5 different languages for days before they come to a collective decision, like a decision to go into a struggle, or a decision to occupy a building, or a decision to block a road with machetes, or whatever it is that they're going to decide to do. So that when this decision is made, it's made collectively. It's made in a way that everybody decides, everybody gets their say, everybody's concern gets stated. So these horizontal communities are diametrically opposed to the vertical power structures of capital, of empire, and its most current incarnation, neoliberalism. We're winning little by little, and it's the poorest, the smallest, the most voiceless, the most faceless people in the world, and their methods of organization that are teaching us how to overcome this repression.
Schneid. I am a private asshole. As a private investigator, I run into more death than law allows. I mean the law of averages. Yes, routine case of industrial sabotage and the factory blows up, killing 23 people. Well, these things happen. I am a man of the world, going to and fro and walking up and down in it. Now, death smells. I mean, death has a special smell, over and above the smell of cyanide, cordite, blood, carrion, or burnt flesh. It's a gray smell. It stops the heart and cuts off the breath. Smell of the empty body, smell of field hospitals and gangrene. I got a whiff of it when Mr. Green walked into my office.
Outside Bethlehem's hospital earlier this month, Ismail Hawaja sat sick with grief. The Israelis had killed his wife, Huda, he told CBC, with an explosion at their home. As is often the case, his story of abuse by soldiers couldn't be verified. The army had nothing to say, and what was happening inside the refugee camp was off limits to foreign reporters. But not to the Israeli media. An Israeli camera went right along with the soldiers, right into the briefings, and right into the Hawaja home. The army blew off the door, and inside found Huda Hawaja mortally wounded on the floor. Ismail Hawaja clearly thought at that point his wife would live. He begged the army to let an ambulance through. There were delays. The camera captured the terror of the woman's young daughter and her brother's attempt to stop her from showing the soldiers her fear. After the mother was finally taken out, one of the soldiers spoke to the news crew. I don't know what we're doing here, he said. Purification, maybe. It's dirty here. I don't know why a good Hebrew boy should be here so far from his home.
This has been Mind Walk, an Upstart Radio production.